15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And I want to thank all the people that do contact us during the week to let us know that they tune into the broadcast and they are spreading the word about our message. Compliments from many of those people to all of our panel members and our guests, especially thanks to Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store. Larkin Conley, a small business advocate and SCORE mentor. Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology Integration. And our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. And I'm always happy to be with you here. I'm Michael Blihash. Well, during the last 2 months, we've had the honor of having a very special guest with us, Curtis Ellis. He's the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance and a well-known journalist. And as I mentioned, over the last 2 months, he's worked in Congress on many television and radio programs. You can see him on YouTube interviews and so much more. He's also served as a policy advisor to President Trump, and that makes him a man who's really had some very good experience. So everything that he has to say helps us to promote our message. Now, Mr. Ellis has been offering us a lot of good information, and I want to compliment our panel members, Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, and Mark Andel, who all join in so well. People like this, sort of around the kitchen table, around the diner table conversations, where I've noticed that many of the programs, Good Morning America and all these others, Fox and Friends, are going out to interview people in the little towns and to the diners to see what's really on people's minds. And I'm very pleased to say that a lot of people are very, very happy that things are starting to change around here in the USA. But first, I want to remind all of you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. And then, of course, sit back, relax, and enjoy. If people live at a distance, email them and ask them to go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. You know, in the last few weeks, we were talking about equal tariffs and all of this. And as I talk to people, they say, Michael, it's the education system. A new focus on education would really help America today and year after year. And they also now feel very strongly as taxpayers, they want to fund a priority in America, and education is number one. Education, as we all know, leads to a positive future for ourselves, for our children and grandchildren, family, friends, and it must always be our first priority. I also feel that many of the difficulties that we're experiencing today is because too many national, state, and even local leaders did not focus our tax dollars, our tax dollars, pay for the schools, on ensuring that all young people graduate with at least one job skill. It's pretty disappointing to hear that some people are getting out of school and they really don't know what to do. They sort of decide what they want to do after graduation. I think that's really something that has to change, or we'll be in the same situation that we are right now. And not being focused also on graduating our youth with job skills is one of the reasons that we're all now starting to welcome these high-skilled jobs people from all over the world. And that's really not a very good situation to be in. I see it in my travels. People are beginning to speak up. Why is this group here? Why is that group here? Where are the American students? So I think today we have to ask, how did we get to this point? It's certainly not because we don't have the schools available and the schools are funded. It's because the schools are not focused on priorities, and that's a big problem. With that, knowing how Rich Loges is a school person, I'm going to ask Rich Loges to begin our conversation with Curtis Ellis, with Mark Andel, and Larkin Connolly. Today is open forum. Hold nothing back.
Good morning, guys. And Curtis, thanks so much for coming back into the Lions Den. you know, Michael, this is maybe in the next couple weeks or so we can get Councilman Alan Dom back on the show, because I remember when he was a candidate and he came on the show, and he had said something that at the time was really mind-boggling to me, which was that in the Philadelphia City Public Schools, 92%, I think he said, 90-something percent of the kids had only one parent at home. Now let's say that he was 50% wrong. So that would mean about 50% of the kids in the Philly public schools have a single parent at home, or maybe not, maybe no parents, and being raised by surrogates, grandparents, etc. Michael, it doesn't matter if you put $1 trillion into a failing school district. It just means they'll waste $1 trillion, right? It isn't the money. The narrative that education has failed because of a lack of financing is a false narrative. Because if you put any amount of money into any organization that doesn't know how to run its organization, that doesn't hire the appropriate staff, that doesn't have a clear and focused mission, it doesn't matter how much money you pour into it, they will waste every penny of it.
I agree. And I will say this as you say that, because in the last 30 years, the funding priorities for our schools has totally gone upside down. Where there were funding provided for shops, for all sorts of counselors to talk about what you want to do with your future and all that's done. And you're right, the single parents, the poor people are being pushed around. I don't believe our single parent households, our poor households, should not be given the guidance to have at least one job priority that they're going to graduate out of our public schools with. It's no excuse, because when the children are in school, they at least have the school to be their example of a positive future. What do you say to that, Curtis Ellis?
Rich brings up a very good point, a very disturbing trend here. Single-parent families, single-parent households, family would be a misnomer, but a single-parent household is perhaps ill-equipped to address the problem. We're expecting schools to do more and more and more. It used to be they taught the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And if you knew how to write, you'd know that you spelled arithmetic wrong. But now we're expecting, because of the breakup of the family, the breakdown of the nuclear family, we're expecting schools to teach everything: morals, values, work ethic, how to brush your teeth, how to speak to somebody. These are things that used to be learned at home at the earliest ages, and that's been lost. And as Rich said, you can pour billions of dollars into schools, but you're asking them to do something they can't do. It's like trying to teach a dog to sing opera. It's not going to happen. So, and you raise a good point that we have to be, what the schools can teach, they should be teaching something so that when they graduate, the students have some type of skill, preferably a job skill. They'll be prepared for a job. Right now, fewer than half of K-12 schools offer a single computer science course to their students. Now, that's something pretty basic these days that ought to be there. The way we had shop class, we ought to have shop class again. The way we had vocational education and handwriting. Now, computer science at least you ought to know your way around a computer. Now, I think kids are probably better than that. Ed Snowden never even graduated college, but he knew how to beat the entire National Security Agency at computers. So, but still, the schools, it seems, are more and more not focusing on the basics. But they're almost turning into indoctrination systems. We're learning about gender studies. We've got I'm not exaggerating, folks, here. This is not crazy talk. They have drag queens coming in to read children stories so that kids can learn how to accept the diversity that's out there. Now, maybe that's a good thing, but maybe we ought to be looking at what are our schools focusing on. Our schools are not there to teach the latest social trends and the latest gender studies or ethnic studies or, now we've got, there are reports, credible reports of higher education schools, professors at colleges saying that mathematics is racist. Because mostly white people are excelling as mathematicians. Therefore, mathematics must be racist. It's like, what? Come on, folks. 2 + 2 = 4 doesn't matter what your color is, no matter what your race or religion is. So I don't want to get too far, on a tangent here, but we need to get back to basics. We need to be educating our children on the issue, on the subject matter, on the core subject matter that's going to prepare them to think critically, to understand the world they live in, to and to be able to work in that world. Now, we don't necessarily have to teach to specific jobs because jobs change quickly. There were no iPhones 15 years ago. There was no such thing as an iPhone app, but there are certain basic skills that we should be focusing on and not get distracted by the latest educational fad or the latest social trend fad or the latest social justice fad. I think that's and if we don't do that and we keep getting distracted, as Rich said, it doesn't matter how much money you pour into these institutions, they're not going to be able to do what we expect of them to do. And then on the larger question, we can't just keep making excuses for broken households and say, well, that's the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. The family of the future is going to be one parent who's working all the time, and you can't have that kind of situation and expect your kids to be prepared to learn when they get to school.
You're right. You're right, Curtis. And I will tell you this: the breakdown of the family is partially due to the loss of employment opportunities. Employment provided respect to a household. Your child and a wife or a husband saw that somebody was out working, trying to earn a living to keep the household united. The kids saw, the good example of the parent going to work. This is very difficult in today's world with so many of our people. When you look at the debt clock and see the number of people unemployed, now those numbers that they have up there are ridiculous because they're looking at the people who are actually on the unemployment records. But after that, they are not really telling the truth by saying how many people dropped out of looking for a job, how many people never re-entered the workforce because they're raising their children, they would like to get a part-time job, but there's nothing available. It's these types of things that are hurting American workers across the board, and that has added to the demise of the family. And with that,
Michael,
yes, Rich.
Can I just ask a quick question before we get the other guys on? I want to ask our listeners. I sent Curtis to you guys, and you took a look. I just recently wrote a research piece where I looked at, based on the FBI crime data, I looked at the per capita highest crime, most violent cities, as well as the most non-fatal gun crime. Now, let's just say that 98% of these cities, Curtis, are not run by miter hat-wearing, gun-toting, Psalms, biblical-quoting Christian occultists who bring their bazooka to the local Aryan Nation book club reading of Mein Kampf. It's not run. It's not run. Those cities aren't run by those people. So I want to ask our listeners, if they could find me a school district or a truly vibrant mobile economy, an economy with mobility, if they can find that for me in these places like Philly and Chicago and Detroit and Baltimore and Newark, these are cities that have been run by the same party for half and near centuries. Like, Curtis, for example, the city of Chicago, that city has been run only by one party for longer than slavery was legal in the United States. Yep. Now, that doesn't even seem believable. It sounds like it's just made up to try to prove a point, but it's not. So if there's anyone out there listening, Michael, who can say, well, Rich, in this city that's been run by the same party for X amount of decades, like the city of Baltimore, whose mayor now requires agencies to meet with the police, Curtis, every single day because the crime is so out of control. The city of Baltimore has been run only by Democrats for the last 18,000 consecutive uninterrupted days. Now, Curtis, do you think that 18,000 consecutive days is enough time to know if something doesn't work? Do we need another few thousand days? Give you a few more thousand? Like, if you didn't show up to work for 18,000 days, you probably wouldn't have a job, right? So Michael, it all comes back to this point that Larkin has made so many times and so correctly on this show, that the destiny of families, and especially of the youth, because the young people are always the biggest true victims. Self-victimization in America right now is the new celebrity status, but where it's actually it's like American Idol for victims. I'm gonna create a TV show that's gonna be American Idol for victims. We're gonna bring everybody in. They're gonna talk about how they were wronged and there's an injustice and we're gonna pretend that life's always utopian and it's fair. But you know who the real victims are in all this, Michael? The youth, yep, the kids.
Absolutely,
they are.
Absolutely. Larkin, your name was mentioned. What are you going to add to this?
Yeah, one of my favorite subjects, Michael. Good morning to everybody, including our listeners. You know, I keep on professing that I'm going to start a party called the Pragmatist Party. I think anytime we face issues and problems like this, you have to go to the lowest common denominator. And Rich has hit on it, so did Curtis. But I'd like to make a point, to add a point. All of our problems are a product of the collapsed American family. And
Amen.
We talk about Philly and Baltimore and Chicago and single family, single parent families and all the problems that creates. I'll tell you what the great support for that fact is. You don't see this happening in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. This isn't happening in Tredyffrin, Shaker Heights, Ohio, some of the fine Maryland suburbs, because these people are employed. The family is a unit. And when you go to school to learn, because that's what families insist upon. So it's the collapse of the family. If I'm a good teacher, do I want to teach in Philadelphia where I can't even get supplies? Or do I want to go out and teach in Tredyffrin Township? That's where all the good teachers are, and they migrate there because who would want to teach in the Philadelphia school system? Who? And whoever that person is probably needs to be canonized by our Pope, who is doing so much canonizing. It's just, to me, is absolutely amazing. So what's it go back to? Michael mentioned it. It really goes back to Dad sitting on the stoop, now smoking a reefer or two, because if he gets caught, he doesn't go to jail. He just pays a parking ticket. you know, this legalization of marijuana beyond the medical implications, to me, is just another attempt on government's part to how do you keep them down on the farm? How do you keep them happy? Well, you let them smoke reefer and sit on the corner and pick up their check twice a month. But who's going to complain? Insurrection? Who's going to – well, why would there be insurrection? These guys are saying to Mark Andel, yeah, I'll be a welder for you, but please, can I use a torch that puts out some funky colors, because I love funky colors when I'm smoking weed. I mean, you know, come on, folks. There is no standard to right and wrong, and this is the first that I've heard you talked about victimization, Rich. But this is a whole other book, as far as I'm concerned. It really is. I almost feel like you can't get good press, or you can't really do anything unless you can prove that somewhere along the line you were a victim.
That's right. It's amazing, Larkin. You just really nailed it. You look at the Democratic convention, which was held in the beautiful city of Philadelphia, when they honored the veterans. They had a day where they're honoring the military. It had to be a victim veteran. It had to be a victim military. We had to have like a transgender quadriplegic woman lesbian in order to get the House to give a round of applause for somebody in uniform. You can't just be in uniform to get a, and it's I got a name for the show that Rich was talking about. It'd be called The Biggest Victim instead of The Biggest Loser. We could have The Biggest Victim, and you can have the sweepstakes there. And it's like, well, let's see. It seems that the right now that who trumps what is, let's see, if you're a woman, that's more important than if you're black, or is it if you're Muslim, you get to be a bigger victim than all the others combined? Because you see, if you're an Islamist, you can throw gays off the roof, you can keep women in bags from head to toe and not let them drive, but that's okay because you're a Muslim, so you're the biggest victim. So I guess they win. I'm not sure.
You know, I'm not sure. I don't want to show my age, but I can see the format of this program. I want you all to close your eyes, and Rich, you and Mark are and Henry are at a disadvantage. But back in the late 60s, it was in the early 60s, I think, there was a program called Queen for the Day.
Right. I'm showing my age. I remember that when I'd stay home from school sick, I'd watch Queen for a Day.
Right. Queen for a Day. And they put four women up there, and the first woman would say, my husband's out of work, my children hate my guts, my house half burnt down last week. And they all tell their story, and then by applause meter, they voted for who really had just the most rotten situation, and then they turned around and gave them all kind of prizes.
You guys have no – you know what? This is – Curtis, Larkin, Mark, I'm sorry, Mark, you got to get on here. You guys all need to check – Curtis, you included. You guys got to check your cell phones, because when March Madness NCAA rolls around, I'm actually launching exactly what you guys are talking about. I'm doing it. Henry's aware of it. You guys need to check your phones, because we are going to do. You know how every year, Michael, in the NCAA tournament, there's like a selection show where a bunch of talking heads sit down and they pick the teams that are going in, and they give
an analysis
of it all. I'm producing a show like that, Curtis, and we are going to have a tournament, and it's called America's Biggest Victim Tournament.com. We're doing it. I'm doing it, Larkin. Check. You guys got to check your phones.
Right.
Now history has to be whitewashed and revised and rewritten, and it's ironic that the people whitewashing, revising, and rewriting are also ushering back in concepts like segregation, like we find in our D-Mic.
Recently,
we had a law professor, a black man, seems like a very nice man, smart man, talking about how he's going to raise his black children to be suspicious and distrustful of white people. And
right.
and that
yeah.
that thought process
New York Times editorial
yeah, that. In the I call them, you know, the billionaire blog, the New York Times D Mike looter and conspirator. So this way of thinking is so the same people tearing down Robert E. Lee and are gonna next come for Washington, Jefferson and our founders as well as other prominent Americans, the same people doing that, they're the ones who are reintroducing back into the mainstream things like segregation, separate water fountains, and Rosa Parks at the back of the bus. So I guess they forgot, Curtis, when the great Martin Luther King, who died over his beliefs, right, who died to bring in nonviolent civil rights and equality at a time when there were true race problems in America. I guess they forgot one of his most famous sayings, which is that we hope to see the day, we have a dream to see one day when people will judge others based on the content of their character and not color of their skin. You just said diversity before. Your skin color, your gender, and where you're born aren't skills. Those are
Right now, Martin Luther King in today's world and in today's context of today's conversation would be drummed out. He would be considered by the certain elements. He would be considered not really for black people. I mean, to dare say that people should not be judged on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character, and that one day black and white children will play together. That's like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, how naive, how ridiculous. It's all about race.
But you know what, Curtis, you bring up a good point, and I'm sure all of you, and we're going to go to Mark next. I think that since the time of Martin Luther King, America's taken a wrong turn, and boy, have we been suffering from it. Dr. Martin Luther King was a wise person. He looked for peace and justice for his people. And the people of today have taken, you're absolutely right, they've taken all the good that he did and all the good that was projected during that time and pushed it aside for hate, anger, and distrust. And that's what we're suffering from. You go to the major media, I don't even want to look at it much these days because they don't have anything to inform me about. They tell me all the same rigmarole. This is no good. That's no good. This one's no good. This one's a thief. I already heard it once. I don't need to hear it over and over again. It's not added any type of value to America. And the loss of jobs has really devalued our country. The jobs that have gone overseas, if just 50%, they don't even have to come back. If our companies restore, expand, and open new lines of products in America, we'll be fine. We'll be absolutely fine.
Martin Luther King was a spiritual man. He was a religious man. He was a God-fearing man. And that's what he played to, and that's why he had such a great following. Heck, 35 to 40% of the people that showed up to his I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. were white.
Right.
It wasn't about race with him. It was about equality.
Because people want to wake up in the morning and know that they're the same. We're all working for the same cause.
He said, Martin Luther King said, I have a dream. He didn't say, I have a plan. He was all about the dream of America and what was going to work and what really was the best thing for the country as a whole. He was a spiritual man, and that's what made him popular.
You know, the old expression of 40 years ago, no work, no pay has to be returned. No welfare unless there's no other way for you to earn a living. In Polish, we say, do roboty, go get a job, get a skill. And today, we need new students learning what the new industrial revolution in America should be like, using the latest technology and robotics and everything else. And with all the new products being introduced on a regular basis, somebody mentioned earlier all the new phones, the iPhone 10 and this and that. We don't have one that's made in America? Strange. Isn't that strange? Why can't we do that? I think there should be a major tax increase for the people that are going to revise the whole system of creating phones in America again. It doesn't make sense to me. All the technology is located outside of America. And with that pause, I'm going to call upon Mark Andel, who, by the way, I'm proud to say, a number of people told me that they saw the American-made label that they usually see on the front page of our internet site on TV last week during the Wheel of Fortune. Mark, how did that go?
Yeah, hi, guys. How you doing? Rich, Larkin, Henry, Mike, and Curtis, great to have you back. Great conversation, guys, and we're going to touch on that. I'm picturing Rich's movie and the American's Biggest Victim, and he walks in like Kramer.
I like that film. Queen for a Day, too. Mark, I love that idea. Guys, please get a plan. Maybe we could do something like that.
Wheel of Fortune was great. Sue Shotwell, my assistant, my boss, got a call from an agent of Wheel of Fortune. Do you want a Made in America, the logo on the spin wheel? And she went for it, never thinking, back in June. And doesn't a veteran win on Veterans Week and picks the Made in America logo and carries it around and ends up winning $51,000, and a veteran from New York? So,
all right.
It was a big deal. It was pretty funny. We never thought the guy would land on that square. So I started, Mike, you had called, and people from all around were texting me. I don't watch the Wheel of Fortune, but a lot of people do, and it was awesome. I had some great news. You guys talking about education, you're talking about breakdown of family. Larkin, you've always said that. Rich, you've been on it. Curtis, I know you're well rehearsed. And, I had some positive news. Now, I've been fighting this fight 28 years with General Welding and Fabricating, and lately in the last 10 years fighting the fight to get metal shops, wood shops, skilled trades back in high schools like I had it. Metal shop, wood shop, power mechanics, electronics. And the high school local superintendent, Doug Schofield, we've been working on it together. We just got 12 workstations, weld stations at a local BOCES. But this week, Monday, I had probably the best call to really show what all of us are about and what we do. And, Mike, this is compliments of you and our team. Miss Betty Deer called. She's a counselor from Iroquois Central in western New York. And she called me and said, Mark, first I'm thinking my daughter did something. She's in 10th grade. Like, what's going on? Counselor, she said, no, Mark, we want to bring the counselors of Iroquois and another local school, East Aurora, in and get educated on welding, get educated on what you need, because we feel movement, and we want to be able to tell our these children and these students what they could go into, what they could get, what they could advance in. Is there CNC-ran equipment? It was the best call, Mike, I've probably received to show where the movement's going, how the demand for welders and machinists is really working, how people are hearing what we're saying. So we set it up for December 6th, and we're going to bring about 6 to 10 counselors in from local schools just to kind of see what they should be promoting and offering these kids, because we all agree it shouldn't be one size fits all. And it should never, even if you're going to be a doctor, you should be able to learn how to handle a hammer, a screwdriver, fix a doorknob. So this was a big call from a counselor that's been there for 20 years and saying there's a change coming, and we want to get more educated so we can help promote it. So I think that was awesome. You guys touched on the family. Family's everything. I had great parents, and my father taught me how to work with my hands. They both grew up poor, but you see that not happening. But great family. I go to a rural area. I do a speech for a workforce development or whatnot, and you see a farm area where all the parents worked and the kids learned from the parents. If the parents knew skilled trades, they have an interest. So great talk, guys. Great things going on. We got a big week ahead for retail. Black Friday's around the corner right after Thanksgiving, and it's retail's done in 31 days. I want to touch on that in a little while too, Mike.
Yeah, and November is American Made Month. I'm pleading with all of you. And by the way, Mark, you bring up a very good point. I think that this should be part of a federal mandate that counselors go out to the local
businesses. This is huge,
to
Mike.
See what's going on. I mean, just look at what you went through there with Mark Poloncarz and all, with the Made in America Act.
We've been fighting this fight a long time.
There's just so many things people try to put us down, they're radical, they're this and that, they're talking, unbelievable stuff. No, it's not unbelievable. And until we return to a system where we can offer somebody something positive for their future, we're not going anywhere.
And Mike, you said positive. We've got to stay positive. As much, there's so much negative out there. The country's divided. We know that. Everybody's negative. You got to stay positive no matter what happens yesterday. You got to move forward with a positive attitude and questions and answers, but try things. And Larkin, you hit it with Martin Luther King. Live your dream, whatever the American dream. I always joke, living a dream is a lot of work. Yes, it is, but it's worth it.
And, you know, being in social services and human services, I have to tell you, a lot of the programs that are out there, they don't really care about people. They're there to hold on to their jobs, do nothing, just spend their time, hopefully be able to do it for 30 years and then retire. That can't continue anymore. Those people have to help people with resumes, accessing job skill placements, place where they can go for training, you know, do what your heart thinks that you'll be good at. They don't do any of that. Everything is, you need benefits, sign up for benefits, do this, do that. But never in the process of doing that are they trying to help the person to secure any level of employment. And they tell me, quite frankly, there's no jobs to send them to.
Yeah. And you know what's neat? I've seen in my company, General Welding, I just had a gentleman leave, put in good time with us, moving on different opportunities. So at first you're down, and how are you going to replace them? Then I had two people step up to the plate, might not have the Harvard degree, but got the want, the drive in their eyes. They came up to me, could I please get a shot? Could I get an opportunity to run that plant? And I see that, and if I can help an underdog and somebody that was never, because a lot of people don't want to admit it, but they don't want these kids. They don't want these kids that don't want to go to college. It's kind of, they're going against the grain. So when I can help somebody help their self that wants to, and really they're going to give it 150%, it's awesome to be part of it. And that's what kind of we're about here.
Well said. And I have something that I want to ask Curtis about and all of you when we get a moment to speak off air. Yes, Curtis, you were going to say.
No, I was saying that's terrific. And Mark, you're a breath of fresh air keeping this focused on what we need to focus on, which is promoting employment for Americans. That is the key to everything, work and family and country. I love what happened on Wheel of Fortune. That is just terrific. We need to celebrate our skills, our ability to make things. We need to reinstill that in every single person, every single child, teach them from the youngest age that they can do it, that there's something that they can accomplish, they can make a difference. It's really terrific. I wanted to talk for a minute about give an update to the listeners. On Monday, the 13th, this Monday just passed, there was I wouldn't say a protest, but there was an event at the Delaware City Refinery. We had the governor of Delaware there, John Carney. We had some refinery workers, the president of Monroe Energy, the president of PBF Energy, Matt Lucy, and some of the United Steelworker locals heads of the local refinery workers there. I've talked about this before in the past. There's a whole issue about the biofuel credits, the biofuel program that requires ethanol to be blended into gasoline in order to cut down on pollution, so our air doesn't look like the air in Beijing or in New Delhi. You don't want to be able to see the air, okay? That's a good thing. We don't want to be able to see the air. We all agree on that. The question is, how do we get there? Right now, there is in place this really ridiculous program for administering the biofuel program to encourage the use of ethanol. And they've through this program, they've put all of the responsibility on the small independent refiners, like we see with Monroe Energy, like we see down in Delaware City, that we see down there in the Philadelphia area. In its infinite wisdom, the Environmental Protection Agency has created a system of paper credits, and these paper credits are traded. They're little pieces of paper, chits, so every time you blend a gallon of ethanol into your gasoline, you get a credit for it. Unfortunately, you've now complied with the law. Now, these independent refiners don't blend fuel. They simply take crude oil and make gasoline and diesel and, you know, all the various petroleum products out of it. They don't have the equipment to be adding ethanol, which is made out of corn. So they end up having to buy these paper credits to show to the government to say, see, we're doing our part. It's really a huge wealth transfer. I mean, that's basically what it is. The president of Monroe Energy pointed out that he spent $200 million last year buying these paper biofuel credits. That's more than they paid to buy the refinery. They bought a refinery for less than $200 million, but last year alone, they had to spend more than $200 million to comply with this administrative program to promote the use of biofuels. It does not accomplish the goal. I've written about this in the past.
I remember getting that article, but what was the, how did the protest wind up this past Monday?
Well, there were several hundred people there, and as I said, we had several big, you know, high-profile people like the governor of Delaware and others. The idea, the point is to have the administration change how they administer this. We're not talking about not using ethanol. That's not the goal. The goal is to actually encourage the use of ethanol. And the whole thing can be solved very easily. If we export ethanol, if we allow the exports of ethanol to be counted toward the production and the use of ethanol, that'll solve the problem. It will lower the price of these paper credits, which that whole system is just, you know, it's kludge. It's a Rube Goldberg scheme. But if you were to, we could encourage the use of ethanol. We could keep the corn farmers happy, keep the ethanol producers happy, and we would not be bankrupting the refineries in Philadelphia. Very simple. Just allow the export of ethanol to count toward the goal of using several billion gallons of ethanol every year. Right now, when you import ethanol, that counts towards our goal. But if we export ethanol, that doesn't count. And that makes no sense.
Curtis, how is the administration making out with this particular request?
Well, it's working its way through. I don't have any inside knowledge on that. But unfortunately, some of the senators from the corn-growing states, from Iowa and whatnot, they're taking a position of don't do anything, don't change anything, keep everything the way it is, and that's really not going to solve the problem. It's not going to help the people in Pennsylvania, I can tell you that. So,
well, keep us posted. And by the way, I wanted to ask you, I sent an article out the other day, Work Ready. Did all of you have an opportunity to read that? That appeared this past week in the Inquirer. It was, in fact, on Tuesday, November the 7th. It brought attention to the fact that one of our local companies, the Northeast Building Products Corporation, and Alan Levin, was being interviewed and was saying that he is looking for qualified people. Did you see that article, Mark, at all?
I briefly looked at it, Mike. I didn't read through it real well.
What happened is this particular gentleman is trying to put the American-made company into a bigger operation. He now has 500 people, and he's going out trying to hire additional people. However, out of every 100 people interviewed, they're not qualified because of drug problems, other disability type problems, self-induced disability problems. And this is something that, you know, is something that we have to start addressing also in our schools, because these are people, he needs 100 new people. And it says, states right here in the paper, anybody could look at it. It's called Work Ready, and it was in the November 7th Philadelphia Inquirer. And how is it possible out of 100 applicants, only two people would be qualified? Rich, do you understand that?
Well, I read the article and immediately have to say I thought about Larkin, because Larkin is he's kind of our resident doobie expert here. not from doing the doobies, of course, but Larkin, you know, Larkin's, I immediately thought about you, Larkin, because I'm reading this story and I'm thinking, here's a guy with job openings. He's looking for talent. He's looking for workers, and you know, and he can't seem to find guys who don't crave Cheetos every 2 minutes. So, I immediately thought, Michael, is that and I'm saying this speculatively, but I bet it's true. I bet that is a microcosm of problems that other foremen and employers have across the country.
Yes, in fact.
Right? There's a variety of reasons why, you know, not the least of which is they love that hippie lettuce. And it just, it's, you know, it's not safe to be a welder, Mark, with a 10-ton machine, you know, and on one hand, and then Cheetos and hippie lettuce in the other hand. Just doesn't,
yeah,
just,
you know, Rich,
workers,
yeah.
Probably too many workers' comp claims on that, right, Michael? You know, workers' comp, hippie lettuce, you know, eating donkey cheese, eating a lot of Cheetos. He just can't seem to put the Cheetos down. You know, I don't know why. I've never seen a man eat so many Cheetos.
Well, you know, Mike and Rich and guys, we live this. You know, this year we got our oil and mining work back. We do all the these filters, these sanders and separators for oil rigs, and we got the military work back. We needed 20 A-plus welders. Started our own school on Saturdays, couldn't find the guys. A lot of the problems, Mike, is you're bringing them in. They have issues. You know, later on, we just let a guy last Friday go because of different issues with drugs. We've even had the Red Bull. You know, you can't have six cans before you 5 minutes before work. And everything, we've had heroin go through the shops. We deal with it, me and my shop manager and general manager, Dale and Paul. Every week, every day, it's such a problem in our country. That's why I'm glad they're giving attention to the drug and alcohol abuse problems. I've dealt with the alcoholics, getting them lawyers and trying to get them straight. It's very difficult. It's a major problem in society. We deal with it all the time, and you can't have it around. We're running through new safety regulations. New York's very tight. We had OSHA come through. It all plays a part. You finally, and the guy we just let go was a very talented guy. Needs help. We offer help, but if they can't take care of the problem, we can't let them injure themselves or others either. Major problem.
Absolutely. Oh, Curtis, have you been seeing this too in the system?
Yes, and I'm so glad you bring it up. This is I'm not exaggerating at all when I say this is something that keeps me up at night, or when I'm up at night anyway. And the opioid crisis is real.
Yeah.
60,000 people died of overdoses last year. That's more people than died in car accidents. It is now one of the leading, if not the leading, cause of death in America. And it is entirely preventable, and it must be cured. In the 19th century, the Chinese nation, China, was subdued by the Western powers through the use of opium.
Mm-hmm.
That was introduced into China for various reasons that I won't go into now, but the emperor said, the emperor's envoy, the emperor's drug czar, if you will, said, if we continue down this path, we will not be able to raise an army, and we will not be able to pay for the army because they're spending all their money on opium. We're facing a similar crisis where we can't raise a workforce, and we can't, let alone an army. They're lowering the standards of admission to the army because they can't hit their recruiting goals because of drugs, because of various mental health problems. And I'm sure they're downplaying the role that opiates and heroin are playing in this. And but you guys have hit the nail right on the head. This is a workforce problem. A lot of the opium problem, and it's synthetic opium, it's these prescription pills, are a lot of this is happening in the very areas that used to be industrial heartland of America. The jobs have gone, the hope has gone, the dreams have gone, and they're being replaced with opium dreams. They're being placed with drug dreams, and it's tragic and it's horrifying.
Curtis,
you're dead on to cure.
Rural areas of Western New York, these kids nobody wants to face. People really don't want them. It ties to the skilled work shortage. It ties to the schools. It says one size fits all. If you're not going to college, you're a nobody. You know, they can't have that stigma no more because it causes these kids to hang at home, feel useless, worthless. Nobody wants to admit they don't want them. That's what I believe. And then they fall into these traps, these drug traps, and they go, you know, the wrong direction in life. And it's all tied together to the Made in America mission and movement, why we've got to get jobs and give people a purpose again in this country.
And education
I love to
is...
I love to hear you say that. That was Mark, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because you have to give people a purpose.
They have to have
people
it.
I believe that in my bones. Look, they say that drug addiction is a physical, psychological, and spiritual disease, and it's purpose. That's the spiritual end of this. People are looking for a purpose, and you have to give them a purpose. And if they don't, if they don't have a purpose and feel a purpose, they will fill that hole with drugs.
You got it.
It doesn't matter if the drug's alcohol or fentanyl or OxyContin, they will fill it with something.
You know, the drug problem knows no economic standard. Rich kids, broke kids, kids from broken homes, kids that come from where the parents were excellent and wonderful, wonderful human beings and brought up five children, and one of them died of an opioid overdose. You know, I have the experience of burying my best friend's son, who at the age of 35 died of opium fentanyl overdose in New Jersey. And it was...
I'm so sorry.
Saddest day I have ever had in my life. I knew that kid when they brought him home after open-heart surgery immediately after his birth. And I helped raise that kid. And there were a lot of problems. There were problems very similar to the ones that Curtis had when he grew up, that Michael, you had, and that I had, all of us had when we were growing up. We just didn't, at that point, have painkillers, and we didn't have access to those kind of drugs.
We were taught there will be pain in life. There will be problems. We expected problems. We were raised, told about the pioneers that went across the country in wagon trains, facing hostile Indians, facing deprivation, facing cold winters. They did not have it easy. And you can expect the same thing in your life. Now I fear that our children for too long have been taught to expect no pain. And guess what? You take this pill, you won't feel any.
Well said. Wow.
We built safety.
We're kind of letting the farmers off the hook here. We really are. And
oh, we are. You're right.
I don't think that. I don't think that needs to be done.
Larkin, in many places in Europe, you get a 10-day supply of a particular painkiller. I've never heard of people getting 30 and 60 and 90-day supplies all at once. There's the beginning of a problem. We talked about this in Bensalem recently, where we should go after the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies. Because the pharmaceuticals know exactly...
The pharmaceutical companies are making $1 million off this, and here's the kicker and the worst part. Medicaid is paying for it.
Yeah. Right. The UNAIDS payer is paying to fill these prescriptions.
There's a pharmacy in West Virginia that has there are like 270 people that live in this stinky little town that's got this a pharmacy, a privately owned pharmacy, not a chain. And it took the feds how long to catch up with this pharmacist who in the year 2016 up through June, and they just caught him, up through June, had sold 3.7 million painkillers.
Yes, I saw that.
3.7 million. And do you think the drug company said, no, wait a minute, there's something a little irregular here. Do you think a drug distributor said, wait a minute? No, they didn't. They said, you're going to buy 3.7 million drugs? Bring them on, baby. Bring them on.
We'll take your money. Go
we'll
ahead.
Your money
and they send
time.
The bill to Uncle Sam. So, because in many of these cases, the people who are out of work, a lot of them are on SSI, Supplemental Security Income, total disability, and they're all on Medicaid, and there's something like almost 40% are on painkillers. So the U.S. government is paying. You know, the Rolling Stones did a song, and they said, doctor prescribes, drugstore supplies, who's going to help me to kick it? And that's where we're at now in America.
Wow.
It is beyond crucial at this point. It is physically the biggest problem this country has right now. And if
Amen.
It doesn't come under control, how do you lose that many Americans in a single day? It's like 113 a day or something. It's just
That's way up there. Unbelievable. And you know what? Where are the leaders? All the leaders, the church leaders, the elected leaders, the community leaders, everybody should be screaming, why is this not being regulated? You're right. The companies are making money, and they all look the other way. Somebody is giving little donation here or there, and they look the other way. We discussed something so important today, education and what's killing our job base in America, and that is not having enough boys and girls come out of school ready to go to work, knowing what the jobs are that the American businesses need to succeed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, we're going to have to continue this particular agenda because it's very interesting, and I'm really glad that everybody has given their opinion. If more programs spoke about positive things that will help our people and bring forth the ideas that we are, America would be a great place. But we've spent a lot of time listening to all the negativity, political bashing and everything else. It's really time now for us to focus on what we're going to do. Just as Curtis said about the Chinese, they had to accept the fact that they either do something or they're going to go down the drain. We have to do the same thing here in America because American workers need us. Closing remarks, Dr. Rich Larkin and Mark, let's hear your final remarks.
Michael, let's get Councilman Dom back on air. I'm going to task you, please, with doing that. Let's get him on air, get a State of the City address. How about that?
Okay. Very good.
It's been a while since I've done video production, but I am prepared to be the executive producer of the first episode of Queen for the Bay.
Okay. Oh, I love it. Mark?
Yeah, your freedom to choose is your power to change. Buy made in America, especially this holiday season.
Thank you. And we're going to be talking about all that next weekend for the pre-Thanksgiving show. And Curtis, I hope that you'll be joining us. Thank you for coming on. As always, you are a very important part of letting us know what's on your mind and giving us an update on things that are happening in Washington and in the jobs world.
Well, thank you for having me. I wouldn't miss it. You're one of the things I will be giving thanks for next week.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. You'll be able to hear a rebroadcast of today's show this afternoon. It'll be up on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11 right here on 860 AM. I wish you and yours the very best. Make sure you go out, shop for the American label, speak up in behalf of American workers. Have a great one.
Have a great week, guys. God bless.